Okay, I had the rather unenviable task of, with a lot of help from colleagues, of trying to in some way pull together the experience of the next generation learning theme. And we have had a lot of discussion over what it all means, and of course you cannot possibly synthesise the richness and complexity of what's occurred over the last 2 days in that theme. So I'm not given to apologising, but in this sense I feel in some ways it hasn't captured the richness. But I'm seeing it a bit like the wave on the beach and smoothing the stones, in the sense that I hope what I'm doing is I'm bringing it together in six key stones, if you like, which I'm going to hand to you to hold. And then I need you to break them apart again and perhaps put them together in a different sort of way. So the health warning comes now. You're not going to be able to sit up there. You're all coming down here and you're all going to talk to each other. But we're going to do this in a structured way so that you've got a chance to work on the themes in a way that we can then capture the knowledge and share it again when the session is over. So more about that in a minute, about how I think it's actually going to work. So this is my invitation to you for the next hour and a bit, to leave your footprint on the sand for the benefit of future generations of learning. So still with me? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so these are some of the tensions. This is a little bit of a personal view. That I've seen an awful lot of the idea of the next generation and the fact they're really very different sorts of people from us who cannot be called the next generation. And I've been puzzled about the extent to which we can really consider that adult learners are part of this and what it actually means. And then there's the idea that it will all be okay if only we involve them early. But I still think it's our job and our responsibility to design for learning and to do the enabling and facilitating. For instance, why would they know about pedagogy, even if they've heard of the word? I don't think you give people autonomy by allowing them to continue in a completely unstructured way. They need an awful lot of growing in order to take that sort of responsibility. So I think this is a tension. And ultimately, if you really believe in this hugely personalised learning, and there's absolutely no doubt about the fact that the informal learning that can take place is the like of which we've never, ever, ever seen before. And in that sense, I do think it's revolutionary. Where does that leave us, for instance, in our college and universities? Can you really have any kind of institutional control on such a thing? Should we even try? So, some tensions there for me, which I think are completely unresolved as yet. And then when we look at the actual learning revisited, again, there's been some shock horror for me, because I've heard, and my colleagues who have been visiting sessions have heard, people saying, oh, well, blogging was interesting, but you know, people didn't really engage. And it was very disappointing because it didn't really deliver what it promised. And actually, the emotional aspects are more important. And, you know, we weren't sure about people's identity and why they would contribute and what was the nature of presence. Now, I hate to be someone who's been around too long, but I'm beginning to feel that I have been, because these were exactly what we were tackling in the early 90s when we started first working, for instance, with asynchronous bulletin boards. So where is the learning that's gone? All we've done is got just sort of better technologies. The human aspects of it, why would you think it would be any different because it's a blog instead of a bulletin board? I mean, that is a complete mystery to me. So I think there's a key issue about how we ourselves learn to transfer as the learning technology becomes more sophisticated, more enabling, how we ourselves learn. We should not go back to, you know, the first marine creatures crawling out of the sea, we surely should at least be a little further into the cycle. So that's some of the key issues for me. Now, this is the way I'm going to hope you're going to talk about the six issues that I'm going to present you, and you will have a choice. It's a snowball where you talk to one other person, ideally someone you haven't met before over the conference, or at least haven't had the chance to talk to about these issues, and then you will talk to another pair, so you end up in a four. And then Craig has amazingly volunteered to try and capture some of these ideas, and we hope we have a chance to go through at least two cycles of this kind. And then as long as you all leave your emails, I'll undertake to email this all round to you so that we are a little bit further into the learning cycle. Okay? Willing to have a go?
Can't read step three.
I'll change the colour of it for you. I'll tell you what it says. I'll change it to white so you can see it when we're doing it. But you introduce yourself to one other person, and then you talk about the theme that we're going to introduce to you. Then there's discussion in pairs. What's down the right-hand side is the number of minutes you'll have. Then you join with another pair, so you're in a four, introduce yourself, and then each person has the chance to speak around the theme. And ultimately, I'm asking for a one-sentence outcome from that discussion at the end of roughly a half an hour. I'll guide you through it when we do it for the first time. There's just a few little rules. Can you read these? Yeah? Each person has 1 minute to talk, and you don't interrupt them in that time. So this is going to be terribly good for you, really. But after 1 minute, then somebody else starts talking and the others listen. And you don't start again until each person has a chance to speak. Do you think you can do it? Okay. I'll help you. Have a go. Okay, now there's six key themes that have come out of consolidating the last 2 days on the Next Generation Learning theme. I'm going to introduce them to you briefly. As we go through, you might like to find out which interests you. You should have the chance to deal in detail with at least two of them over the next hour. And I'll put them up, obviously, again. But the first one is this transformation of learning itself, whether it is only surface, and whether there's a way of deepening this, perhaps moving away from the idea of the means and the technology to the ends and the benefits, or is there some other way of doing this? So there's actually quite a few questions in there, but it's almost a question of where are we on the cycle, and can we actually shape it differently from this point in? Do you get the rough idea of that one? Yeah? Issue two, how can we actually learn from ourselves and the journey that we've been on over the last 10 years or more, so that we don't constantly do this reinvention of the wheel when the technology changes a little? Issue three, there were some people who started to say, the technology is now invisible. Let's stop talking about the relationship between the technology, the pedagogy, the role of the learner, and let's just concentrate on the learning. So that's a simple question to be debated. There was another, for me, surprising issue that I didn't originally pick up when I looked at the abstract, and there was a lot of papers around the role of physical space. And it didn't seem that people were any longer trying to emulate physical space in the online environment, rather as they did when we started out. But instead, some of the physical spaces were trying to emulate some of the benefits and affordances of the online environment. Interesting one. Five, I think pretty much accepted that there's a huge shift on the locus of control of learning from ourselves and what has to be taught, simply because of the mass of opportunity associated with the information age. But what can we actually do about this? You know, do we want to try and gain control back? Do we want to hold it against? Or do we actually want to change ourselves accordingly? And finally, the big picture stuff. One or two of my colleagues have said there's a plot, and it's about constructivism. And we're all subscribing to this very pervasive plot that we're all constructivists now, and of course it's taken as read. And if you don't agree with that, that you haven't signed up to that, then actually what are our guiding philosophies? What is going to be the big picture on learning? And who will be the Dewey or the Vygotsky of our generation? Because we're looking back to much earlier generations in our revisiting. So anybody want to have a go at the big picture stuff? That's issue 6. Do they make any sort of sense to you? Yeah? I'm going to ask you to choose in a minute, at least the first one. So I'm going to briefly go through them again. I'm sorry I didn't have time to summarise them, but I will while you're having your first talk. So, deep transformation of learning, how we can learn from ourselves to actually shape what we do next. Is the technology invisible, or to what extent? The role of physical space being transformed, the locus of control of learning, and the plot. Yeah. Okay, can you make a choice? Okay, so what you need to do now, we will be in this room all the time, so you can leave your stuff where it is. But what I'd like everyone to do is to come down into this space, please, or at least in the front row or two, and find one other individual whom you've not spoken to yet. Okay, who tackled issue 1? Issue 1. We've done that, yeah. Issue 1. One sentence, please.
It's a very long sentence, I'm afraid. Semicolons might be employed. We were concerned in our group if the knowledge created by the new tools was of as high a quality as knowledge created by old tools, such as face-to-face communication. And we were secondly worried about the digital divide, semicolon. Many people are disenfranchised still about e-learning, and for all the good and exciting developments seen at this conference over the last few days, how many people from the next generation of learners are actually here?
And what's your answer?
Not many.
Right. Okay. Did you get that, Craig?
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, you can. It's fine to put a summary. Thank you very much. Somebody else tackling issue 1. Thank you.
We thought that technology invents itself to some extent, and that humans then make use of what they have to hand, and that's led to the greater democratization of education and a greater role for informal learning. This is a sentence.
What we really want is something we can capture on, rather than a good sentence. So.
We think technology invents itself, and that people then make use of what technology there is there, and that that has led to the democratization of education and a greater role for informal learning.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else did one? Is that all the ones? Right, who did 2? Number 2. Okay, one over there.
How can we learn from ourselves? Well, we started off by saying we're already learning from ourselves in the fact that we're a member of a community by the very nature that we're all here together. But what we came up with was something that can be summarised as the 3 E's. We all need to learn to be to expose ourselves in the sense that we will express the difficulties we're having and the uncertainties with moving forward, especially with the new technologies. and be willing to be experimental with the new technologies and share them with our colleagues so that we can move forward.
I've
so
got the three E's there, express and experiment.
The three E's, expose ourselves.
Oh, expose. Okay, there's an expose at the beginning. Got it.
So expose ourselves and be expressive about our weaknesses and our uncertainties and move forward with experimentation, which we will share with our colleagues.
Okay, do you think we're doing that now? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. That's really good. Anyone else did two? Thank you. Right. Okay, yeah.
Our group kind of felt that if we're going to learn from ourselves, it's all about, first of all, love. We need to fall out of love with technology and in love with people and essentially learn from people. And by that, we mean learners, peers, ourselves, and also our institutions and other organisations. And that in falling in love with those people and learning from them, we need to be brave enough to share the real truth and not a sanitised truth.
What, like other kinds of love, you mean? Yeah. I think you're going to have to repeat that for Craig, actually. Would you mind? He's got as far as need to fall out of love with technology and in love with people.
And by people, we mean learners, peers, institutions and others. And kind of learn from one another and be brave enough to share the real truth and not the sanitised truth, which is actually sometimes things don't work. And that we need to share the failures and learn from those.
So, guys, a bit more love, yeah?
Sure,
yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Who else did two? Another one here.
The short and the bad news is that we don't know whether we can learn, but the good news is that society may have changed, and communication as well, but mankind hasn't changed, so we can take ourselves as an example. Someone suggested, and we like the idea, that we should manoeuvre ourselves into a position where we are the learners so that we can actually be confronted ourselves with new communication and learning technologies. But it is a paradoxical situation in that we, above 30 or 35 years, aren't really going to cope maybe very well, but there is
hope. Does
everyone
agree with him there? Over 35, you've had it? I think that's what he said.
Yeah, 30, yeah? 35, above
35. 35, we're going to find it difficult to cope. Oh, that's a difficult... and most of the rest of us. So... who thinks that the other 35s are finding it difficult to cope?
No.
We've got a different sort of divide. Very brave man.
Well, that would include me. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got there. Can you just repeat what you said about the paradox?
We are supposed to teach the new generation, but if we find it difficult ourselves to cope with that. That's the paradox.
Yeah. But, it was my query about us not being the next generation.
But then we say our anatomy hasn't changed. We haven't really changed. Yeah. Communication has changed.
Okay. We're still cavemen under our clothes, aren't we? Okay. Okay. Anybody else do two that we haven't had feedback from? Up the top. Okay. Did you get enough? Right, this is still two, so it's on the same one. Thank you.
Yeah, we had quite a wide-ranging discussion. I think basically we're looking at the need for evidence-based teaching, the need to remember the pedagogy and don't jump on the technological bandwagon.
That's how we learn from ourselves?
Yes, that's how we should be learning from ourselves.
That's how we should be learning.
Looking at the past, seeing the various technologies which have come and gone, and looking for sound pedagogic principles and what has worked.
Okay.
And finding out what is currently working and developing that.
Okay, thank you. Has everyone who discussed two had the chance to feedback? Move on to three then. Is the technology invisible? Three behind you. Yeah. Okay.
This lady. Is the technology at last becoming invisible? We said the visibility of technology is fading out, but as it does, we become more reliant on it. However, when it breaks, it becomes very visible, and we often become helpless because we may not have any physical backup.
Oh, isn't that right? Your email goes down and your world comes to an end. One time I used to feel like that about my washing machine. Now it's my computer. Did you get that, Craig?
No, the technology became invisible.
Do you want me to drop this piece of paper and read it again?
Did you just read it again?
From the top? No? We become more reliant on it. However, when it breaks, it becomes very visible. And we often become helpless because we may not have any physical backup.
Yeah. What did you say? Harry Potter. Harry Potter.
Invisibility cloak. Yeah. Invisibility cloak slips. Yeah.
Did anyone else do that one? Yes. We've got one more for that one. Thank you. Oh, what? Whoa, go, man.
Right, we said that the students see technology as invisible, the lecturers don't. The students will push us to become natives. That's a short sentence. You can't
I like that
sticky.
Sentence.
Do you need it? Got it on a sticky?
Yeah, it's probably worth having, yeah. For students, it's invisible. For lecturers, it isn't. Yeah, okay. And there's another one here to go next. Did you do the same one? Yeah.
We also discussed everything that was said there, but also that if you're using the technology in different or innovative ways, then it becomes very visible. And also, at the same time, the technology could be invisible to one group, but very visible to others. So if you're a user of a system, you could see it as being visible if it's new or it's breaking down, whereas the people who are, say, the managers of that technology see it as invisible.
Thank you. Okay.
We've got an extra bit as well.
No, sorry, I've got to move on. Perhaps you give it to Craig later. Perhaps you give it to Craig later and you can add it. There's one more here.
We came up, our sentence is, we don't know what invisible means. That the evidence is that technology is increasingly visible. People like to wear it, carry it around, show they've got it. So we don't think it's becoming more invisible in that sense. It is becoming ubiquitous, but we had a concern about the uneven access to that technology and the uneven levels of learning that result from its use.
Okay, thank you. If Craig's still alive at the end of this, you can add any bits and check with him that he's managed to capture what you've said. Thank you very much. Is that everyone who did number three? We'll move on to number four. Yep.
We want to use space, both physical and virtual, in new and better ways. And we want to exploit the new technologies that are coming on, like Web 2.
Okay.
But...
I was just starting to like...
We're all struggling in different ways with legacies from previous generations.
Oh, right.
One example being this wonderful...
Yeah.
And we could fill the rest of the slide with useful examples.
At least there was a bit of flat space.
There was.
In this one, which there wasn't in the others.
And only three people sprained their ankles getting down here. Yeah. So.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else do the physical space one? Yes, there's one over there.
Right, we had a quite interesting discussion about the way that learners learn has changed, and people using MySpace and things like that, sort of online discussion forums and networks. And that should now be reflected in the actual physical design of learning environments, such as the way labs for computer science is produced. So things like breakout areas and having PCs on carousels where the people can talk to each other and discuss ideas, that should be now represented in that physical environment.
So you actually subscribe to the idea that the way we're doing things online, people are doing things online, is impacting on the design of the
system? Yes, we feel very strongly that's the case.
For the students, but we have to make sure that the support spaces and the learning spaces for the staff come along as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I think there is a risk that the staff get a bit left behind with the second hand-me-down desks.
Yeah, we agree with you. I agree with you. Unless we've got a small, what we call the media zoo, which is an experimental area for staff and their students alone. So they're safe in there. Well, we put them in cages. Lock them in. Okay, did you get that? Yeah, super. Did anyone else do that one? Okay, thank you. We can move on to the number five now. The locus of control. Who had to go at that?
We think the locus of control appears to have changed, but the changes are superficial. If you think of informal learning through other technologies, we think that there's a difference between control and structure, and that both teachers and learners want structure, want structure.
Let's make sure we've got this, because it feels like you've put your finger on something important here to me. Is that right?
Yes. We don't think there's much you can do about it, because learners will use the technologies they want to use, like wikis and so on. But there's a spectrum of control, from some people using technology to control and the other end, anarchy.
And if we were going to shape it, where would we put ourselves?
I think the view we came up with is that you couldn't do much about it, but that you do have some of the drivers for control are things like assessment. So, you know, we talked about peer assessment, whether that's really happens, you know, because in the end of the day, the teachers award assessment. So,
Thank you.
Mm.
Anyone else do that one? Or behind you?
You can hold it. We said the locus of control is determined by who controls the assessment, which, I mean, the assessment could offer variety and choice. And then within this, the students will use whatever appropriate technologies there are around, the things that are popular, and they'll use them to collaborate and seek out their own learning. Within this, the tutor should be ensuring that the students are actually kept on message, kept on track. But it's the assessment that is the key locus of control.
Okay. Who agrees with that? About half, I think. It's very interesting. And we're all going to have to move to do a lot more on assessment, aren't we? I expect that. Anyone else do that one? That one up there.
Yeah, we came from backgrounds in history, engineering, computing, and business. And basically, they all ganged up on me, and we went for learners can't effectively lead their own learning until they have fundamental skills. It is a disservice to all to promote undirected learning if we are to ensure meaningful, self-directed, and empowered learning. Does that make us slightly traditionalist?
Repeat that, please. Until they have fundamental skills.
They have fundamental skills. Semicolon. It's a disservice to all to promote undirected learning if we are to ensure meaningful, self-directed and empowered learning. Yeah, I've got it all written down. It's an accent thing,
okay,
I think.
Okay, might be best if you
it. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Very interesting approach. Anyone else do that one? Has everyone spoken apart from group six? Anyone not fed back from their group? Well, did you do well? Fantastic. Now, because group six is there a clock to turn us all into constructivists, they have already put their answer up, as you can see. Can we have a mic here? Who's the mic? The gentleman here. And he's going to read out what he wrote. Just here. Where's he gone? Oh, he's behind you.
Right, this is more or less, I think, what I wrote. There's no plot. How students learn, though, depends on their particular learner's context, and constructivism-based teaching methods and activities can be restrictive and, in some cases, counterproductive. In other words, one size doesn't fit all. But we feel that the constructivist sort of paradigm is really being promoted by the affordances of the technology. So there is a technological drive to people discovering.
Yeah, it's a strange form of technology determinism, I think. Yeah, okay. Who agrees there's no plot? Who thinks there is a plot? I think there's a driver, yeah, okay. Okay, you've all done fantastically well. We'll try and make this into something meaningful, and I'm happy to. I'll certainly try and get the whole presentation, including this feedback, on the website. I'll put it on my website as well, so you can download it from there. And I'm very happy to mail it out to people if you leave me your email address. So either give us a note with your email address with Knowledge Cafe, so when I get back to the office I know what it is, or write it on the back of your business card. And I'll have a go over the next week or so to turn it into something that you can keep. Okay. Can you give yourself a clap? Yeah.